Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening all week long. We have a busy show coming your way. This hour, in a matter of moments, going to be joined by Admiral James Stavridis, the 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO and best-selling author. And at the bottom of the hour, Governor Jeff Landry of Louisiana. But first, as we look at the campaigns and everything else going on today, we'll be looking forward to all the breaking news throughout this hour. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
At this time, the FBI has not identified a motive, nor any co-conspirators or associates of Crooks with advanced knowledge of the attack.
Well, it's really frustrating. The assassination investigation, questions intensify, impatience grows on the lack of answers and inability to establish a motive for the gunman as we find out more about his homemade IEDs and little about his encrypted apps.
Number two.
We are releasing new Fox polls from key Sunbelt states, and it's anyone's ballgame. Former President Donald Trump holds a one-point lead in North Carolina. Kamala Harris is leading by one in Arizona, by two in Nevada and Georgia.
New polls are out, and Harris better than Biden, but her convention bounce was barely there. We discussed the Fox polls, battleground game, and for both sides.
Number one.
The reason it's a huge event is because Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have made it that way. It should not be a big deal to do an interview as a presidential candidate. The fact that we're all like on pins and needles, like this could make or break her campaign tonight, is bizarre.
It's true. The interview, yes, the night has arrived where the ticket of joy sits down with CNN, yet she needs her running mate by her side. It's kind of bizarre. What are your questions? And is there any adequate explanation on why she is trying to take some of Donald Trump's issues? I mean, is there an explanation for it? I mean, from the EV mandate to the frank fracking to drilling to allowing people to have their individual insurance to border patrol, not only border enforcement and building the wall. She's taken all those issues. I can't wait to hear the explanation. But let's talk about what's happening around the world. Admiral James Stavridis joins us now. Admiral, welcome back. You're the same guy that wrote 2054, right? A novel of the next world war?
I did.
Right. So there, go ahead. Pick it up if you want to know what the future looks like. First off, Admiral, we hear Zelensky is going to come here within the next 2 weeks, I guess, to the UN. He wants to meet with President Biden. He wants to loosen up the restrictions on the weaponry we've given them to be able to hit more into Russian territory. Do you think he'll be granted it? Should he be?
He definitely should be. I hope that he is. If I had a criticism of the Biden administration in Ukraine, and I, by and large, they've supported the Ukrainians, but they've been consistently late to need. What I mean by that is they delayed sending Stingers initially. Then they held back on tanks for a while. Then they held back on cruise missiles. They held back on the HIMARS, surface-to-surface missiles. They held back on F-16s. Eventually, they get to the right answer, and I'm hoping they will get there pretty damn quickly, because now is the time to tell the Ukrainians, yes, you can attack targets. You know, they're not going to go to Moscow, but targets that are 300, 400 miles inside of Russia, those ought to be fair game. And to conclude, by allowing them to do that using U.S. weapon systems like the ATACMs that you and I have talked about, or even the F-16s, by letting them do that, you can undermine Russia's ability logistically. You take out their fuel, their ammo dumps, their medical supplies, all of that, legitimate targets of war. We ought to unleash the Ukrainians. I hope the Biden administration does so.
General Jack Keane agrees with you. Listen, 36.
We will not let the Ukrainians use our weapons to fire back at the Russians. Does this make any sense to anybody? It's appalling how they're hamstringing the Ukrainians here. What the Ukrainians want to do is punish Russia as much as possible, take as much territory as they possibly can, prevent Russia from taking more territory in the Donbass region, and go into negotiations next year in the best possible position, leverage so that they can have influence in those negotiations.
So, I mean, that it all goes towards some type of ceasefire and peace plan. If you could make them come to the table. But you're not going to do without any, they're not going to do without any leverage.
Yeah, General Jack, 100% right. You know, put a Navy admiral alongside him. We're the joint team. And I think if he could find an Air Force general, all three of us would say this. This is conduct of military warfare 101. So I believe unleash this. And frankly, this is about not so much the battlefield, it's about the negotiating table. And I think that's what Zelensky will be trying to convey. And by the way, you know, press reports I've seen, I don't have this firsthand yet, but press reports I've seen suggest that he will also be briefing or talking to presidential candidate Trump and presidential candidate and Vice President Kamala Harris. He really should talk to all three of those people, lay out a plan, and make the case for unleashing these weapons.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we got to do something sustainable on their border, whether it's getting into NATO or not. It doesn't matter. There's got to be some type of missile defense on their border to prevent the next invasion, because it affects all of Europe, and hopefully stop the future invasion of Russia. I'm not sure what lessons they've learned from this. If I was to put you, what do you think is going on within the Russian government and what they thinking about this whole two-year war of choice? What do you think they think of? Do you think that this looks like the disaster on the outside? Does it look the same way on the inside?
I think it does. And if you go back to the U.S. experiences in the war in Vietnam, which this is starting to resemble in terms of how it's going to soak up a lot of Russian young manpower, how it's going to slowly create divisions in the society, it takes a while. It took 5-6 years of combat. Here in the modern era, as you know, Brian, everything is accelerated because information is so widely available. So my supposition, and it is supported by any number of sources that I have, is that these cracks, these divisions inside Russian society are beginning to take hold. This is the reason, along with Ukrainian battlefield success, the other reason Putin may well be willing to come to the negotiating table next year would be those internal divisions. I think he started this wildly overconfident. I think he recognizes how badly this is going, broadly speaking. He's starting to look for an exit. I think all of that tees up the potential for a negotiation. And, you know, see paragraph one, the first thing we ought to do is let the Ukrainians take as much battle space as they can and do as much damage as they can inside Russia. Hey, Brian, one other thought. You mentioned NATO membership for Ukraine. I would argue not immediately, but in the 2 to 3 year period when we get past a negotiation, we really want Ukraine in NATO. And I'll tell you why. When this war is over, they are going to have the most highly blooded, innovative, capable army ground forces in Europe, bar none. We want them on Team NATO.
So what about the fact that they've engineered their own ballistic missiles themselves?
It's amazing what they have done. It's ballistic missiles. It's the development of exquisite drones and intelligence. And, you know, the admiral's going to say this, what they've done to the Russian Black Sea fleet at sea.
Without a navy.
They have sunk. Yeah, they've sunk a third of the Russian Black Sea fleet and driven the other two thirds hundreds of miles away. They've effectively neutered the Russian Black Sea fleet. And they've done it, as you say, without any actual naval warships themselves. We're watching naval warfare shape shift in front of our eyes here, and it's all because of Ukrainian innovation, determination, and resilience. We want them on our team.
Admiral, there's people listening to us right now who say that we're to blame for this because starting the Clinton era, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, we started signing up Warsaw Pact countries and making the Russia seem surrounded as Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, and all these other countries signed up, Georgia. And not Georgia's not in, but the other countries surrounding up the Baltic nations. Mm-hmm. What do you say to people who say that? You must have heard that.
I have, and I'm always respectful, and I make the following argument, and I think it's a strong one. Open the book of history, and you can see dozens of times that Russian tanks – have rolled to the West. The Red Army raping its way across Germany at the end of World War II. 1956, Russian tanks crushing Budapest. 1968, stamping out the Prague Spring, Gdansk in Poland. I can show you multiple times Russia has attacked to the West. Show me in that book of history where NATO tanks have attacked Russia. Never happened. And at the end of the Cold War, all the countries you mentioned, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Romania, both the Warsaw Pact and former Soviet republics, they came to NATO begging to join NATO. And they did so because they had spent decades with a Russian boot on their throat. Only one side of this equation ever attacked the other. That's Russia. We were smart to bring those Warsaw Pact countries into the alliance. And I'll close with this. Say we hadn't done that, and today Vladimir Putin retained control over all of those countries, the massive Polish economy, the strategic position of the Baltic states, control completely of the Black Sea. In what crazy way is that a better world? It's not.
I hear you. I just want to pivot, if I can, to what Israel is dealing with. First in Gaza, it seems like they've focused over the last few days over in the West Bank. They have no choice. I was talking to Admiral Ambassador Friedman yesterday, who was there for 4 years under Trump. He believes ultimately the Palestinians are not going to be in the West Bank and basically not going to be in Gaza. Where do you stand on this?
I think that ultimately the Palestinians are going to remain in both places. The problem is not geography. And by the way, I know Ambassador Friedman well, wonderful guy, very smart. But it's not about geography. It's about governance. Who is going to govern that population? And here is the real challenge. And I'm sure the ambassador and I would agree, this is not the work of weeks or months. This is generational change within the Palestinian community. Job one is getting rid of Hamas, killing Sinwar, ending that movement. Then I think you can begin to have a coherent conversation about putting an Arab peacekeeping force in Gaza and building on that with the Palestinian Authority. They need a new generation. Their leader is 88 years old. Time for new blood there. I think we can get there. But it's not easy. It's going to be a challenge. But ultimately, I think there will be a Palestinian state roughly centered on the West Bank and probably parts of Gaza.
Okay. Well, I guess obviously we'll have to see. You can't do anything with Hamas. Basically, the mob.
No.
It's like the
no.
mob running a city. Until that mob is gone, you're never going to know what the people really think. Right?
Job one. Job one. Got to get that done. And I support the way Israel has gone at it. And I think that over time, getting rid of Hamas and particularly Sinwar, the leader, job one, then you can start to talk ceasefire, reconstruction, mm-hmm. Palestinian state. It's a 1-2-3 process.
How long can we keep these two striker, these aircraft carrier striker groups in the region?
Well, we can keep them there forever. I wouldn't want to see that. Each one of those carrier strike groups, and as you know, I commanded Enterprise Carrier Strike Group, about 15,000 sailors and Marines. You're just burning through their time. They deserve to get home to their families. But the beauty of the U.S. Navy, U.S. Marine Corps, is we can deploy forward. We can keep forces forward. I look for those carriers to stay there, both of them, another month, because it's a signal not to Hamas, not to Hezbollah. As you know, it's a signal to Tehran, to the Iranians.
True, but are you worried about the signal we're sending to China and that's we've taken the eye off you?
I am worried. And over shifting gears one more time and going to the Taiwan Strait, we're continuing to move Freedom of Navigation patrols through there. But China's well aware when our carriers are drawn into the Middle East, they have more latitude in their region. It's a strong argument for a powerful and capable Navy.
All right, Admiral, thanks so much. Pick up his book, 2054, a novel of the next world war. Always appreciate the quality time, Admiral. Enjoy your Labor Day.
You as well. Happy Labor Day. Talk soon. Thanks,
all right,
Brian.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. If you want to write me, BrianKillmeade.com. When we come back, we have more to talk about, especially campaign 2024 and the big interview tonight. What questions would you want asked and answered?
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Because she's been snake bitten by interviews in the past. Okay, so she could go and do, even like if it's an easy interview, there's always seemed to be something that came out of it that would then put her back in the corner for a while. And she'd be like, I'm not going to do any interviews for a while. Then she'd come out and do another one, and then she'd be back. The other thing is, I think it's very interesting that Politico put out that Tim Walz, they didn't want him to go out and do his own interviews because they don't even know what their own policies are together.
Right.
And one of the things that the media will do is if you have any sort of daylight between the two, then you will like drive a truck through it.
That is Dana Perino this morning talking about the 9 o'clock interview tonight, which will be aired tonight, but taped earlier, I think around 2 or 3 o'clock with Dana Bash of CNN. And she's going to be there with a running mate. Now, was it a big deal when Jesse talked to President Trump and J.D. Vance? No, it was a novel because we always get Trump and we got J.D. when he's running for Senate, but never together. Of course, it was a big deal, but getting them together would have been great the day they did it. But it's already been 2 weeks and you're through a convention. You've seen them both and they barnstormed everywhere. So now she goes, yeah, I'll do an interview. But now she's doing it with her running mate. And it looks as if she does not feel comfortable to sit. Now, the New York Times does this story to sit down by herself. New York Times does this story and they interview. This is how pathetic it is. They interview the New York Times writer who interviewed her last time. And essentially, they said she's hard to interview. She stares at you the whole time. And then when I gave her questions like reflect on who you are and how you got here, she had no interest in giving her origin story. And she didn't want to talk about any type of turbulence with people pushing to get her off the ticket. She was reluctant to be there. And I fundamentally feel that the problem with her, that Trump has the easiest time when people ask him what he thinks. Why? Because he's got these core values and he's got this unbelievable confidence that he's right. So when you come up to him, you could be that guy at the deli, or you could be the guy at the network, the woman at the network. I'm not saying it's a gender thing. And he'll tell you exactly what goes on. I was watching this interview in 1991 with Larry King. Donald Trump looking thinner, saying almost the same things about trade, about the need to manufacture in this country, how bad NAFTA is. And it turns out a lot of the stuff he said was right. But the reason why you can sit and do an interview, and then even though sometimes not after everything doesn't go out the way he proposed it, is because he has to do through government. It's not the Trump Organization. She has no core beliefs. She grew up in San Francisco, Berkeley. She's way to the left. And she learned about law and order at a time in which people were cracking down on criminals. She quickly switched after George Floyd because she doesn't stand for anything. She wanted all green because that's where the party was going. The party's getting pushed back. Now she's left that. No core foundation.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Kamala Harris, she's pretending that she agrees with us on everything. And if you look at her campaign the past week and a half, she pretends that she agrees with Donald J. Trump on every issue. She is running a copycat campaign.
That is J.D. Vance. And I can't say he's even exaggerating. I mean, to be tough on the border all of a sudden, as I mentioned now, when she comes to fracking, is she going to explain why she all of a sudden thinks fracking's a good thing? I mean, this is what you should ask yourself, too, if you're an independent undecided, and I respect that. Are you going to vote for somebody about what they say, or can you judge him by what they've done? Now, you can judge Trump by what he says and what he's done. I couldn't say that in 2016. I could say it in 2020. But now you have to look at Vice President Harris, and she does not want you to judge her from what she's done and said. She wants you to look at her as a breath of fresh air, something new, a new direction, a brand new start. That's not possible. And you shouldn't think that whatever she says she's going to do, because you have to see what she's done to understand what she'll do. Governor Jeff Landry joins us now, the 57th governor of Louisiana. Governor, welcome back. Your thoughts about what J.D. Vance said, the hijacking of a lot of the Trump issues.
Brian, it is absolutely amazing to me. Okay. And the Democrats, they're so great at this. They just are. They're just so great at all of a sudden waking up after they basically plundered everything from the American people for 3.5 years. They believe that they can all of a sudden start doing all kind of great things in a short amount of time. They can start. That's the great part. They want to try to start, or they want to try to say it, so that people say, oh, well, maybe we'll give them a chance. And then they go back to just the way they were right after people elect them. I mean, there is no question that she owns the Biden policies. None. It's unequivocal. I mean, it is amazing to me. And then we say, well, you know, she doesn't have a record. She does have a record. She has Joe Biden's record because she's been in that White House over the last 3.5 years.
Right.
We've never seen her stand up and say, no, we shouldn't do this or we should do that. She has not one thing. We have not heard a word from her. In fact, I don't know what closet they kept her in over the last 3.5 years, because that's where she was. She certainly was not at the border. And so, you know, all we have to do is to articulate to the American people what Ronald Reagan said when he was debating Jimmy Carter. He said, hey, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
And you know what she says? That wasn't my record. I'm going to be fresh. Don't judge me by that. I was the vice. She's about to say it tonight. I was the vice president. And what do you say to that?
Well, what I would say to that is, well, show me where, as the vice president, you challenged the president or anyone in his cabinet to do it differently. Like she can't just sit there and claim that, oh, she's innocent while she sat in the vice president's seat. I mean, the thing about the vice president in our country, they run on the same ticket, meaning they believe in the same things, meaning they both champion the same policies. It's not like she's coming like out of the Senate and then trying to run for president. She's coming from a gubernator to a governorship. I mean, and that's what I would say.
She
and
always says she's the last voice in the room, the last one in the room before major decisions are made. I want you to hear what Governor Tim Walz. I know people are, you know, when you get on the campaign trail, you got to be black and white and you got to be big and exaggerated. But here's what Governor Tim Walz, a guy you probably know from your governor's meetings in Boston, Massachusetts yesterday in front of the firefighters union. Cut three.
Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, they have something a little different in mind. The only thing these guys know about working people is how to take advantage of them, how to not pay them. Every single chance they've gotten, they've waged a war on workers and the ability to collectively bargain. When it comes to so-called right-to-work laws that deprive unions of funds they need, Donald Trump has said he supports right-to-work 100%. Everybody in this room knows right-to-work means right-to-work for less, right-to-work more dangerously, right-to-work for no pensions. It doesn't mean the ability to collectively bargain to fight with the dignity that work brings to each and every one of us.
You have a diverting opinion on that?
I mean, I just listen to what he's saying. I mean, think about exactly what he's saying. There is nothing that has put more pressure on working people than inflation. Nothing. There's nothing that has impacted the working man and woman more than inflation and the lack of jobs in this country. And you know what kills the working man? When he's got no work. You know why he's got no work? Because the Democrats have sent all the work to China. Donald Trump over the last 4 years tried to bring that work back to America. Show me where Joe Biden put in place any policies that brought the great work, the jobs that we
Well, he said the CHIPS Act.
Back to the United States.
He said the CHIPS Act. He said with the CHIPS Act.
The CHIPS Act. The CHIPS Act. Well, what have they done with the CHIPS Act? Like where are the measurables? And that's my point, Brian. Like, to me, I don't understand what. Look, this is very simple. There's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump could absolutely win this race. He's winning the race. If we run the campaign in the swing states and around this country, like they ran, and you were there, the Republican National Convention, where real people got to tell real stories about the real policies that affected them and how they were better off than they are now, and we let people We let the average person tell the story that they so desperately want because they see the frustration. They go into the grocery aisles where there's empty shelves and gas prices are so high, utility bills that they can't afford anymore, healthcare is out of control. Like, all of those things are based upon policies that began way back when Barack Obama was the president. I was a member of Congress. And so, like, the pressure that Americans feel today are based upon the policies that Democrats put in place.
So manufacturing jobs in Michigan from July 2019, 624,400. In July of 2024, they're down 17,400 to that. In Wisconsin, there were 484,000 in 2019. Now that's down 2,000. In Pennsylvania, they've lost 8,300 manufacturing jobs from 2019 to 2024. Total loss of 27,700. So the manufacturing, I know Joe Biden's always walking around talking about the manufacturing jobs that he brought back, but he also is losing a lot when you come to these electric cars. You can go green, but you can't do it with a happy union, can you? At one point, these unions got to start acting on behalf of their union workers. It takes less workers, and it takes material from outside this country.
Well, and Brian, let me just say this. If the statistics that you just laid out, if those jobs didn't just completely disappear, right, in the country, I can tell you, if they didn't disappear, they left Michigan, they left Pennsylvania, and you know where they went? To the South. They went to states that are run by Republican governors, that are run on conservative principles, that appreciate what built this country, which is the American citizen, okay? And so if the jobs did not completely vanish because of the policies of the Democrats, then those jobs were moved. If they stayed domestically, they went to states where Republican governors and Republican legislators are putting in place policies that the American people appreciate. And that's why you see the migration of people that are moving from east and west into the central part of the country.
Governor Jeff Landry is our guest. So, Governor, you have signed an executive order banning the teaching of critical race theory in public schools. I've been against it from day one, but now the country's rebelling against it. Charlie Gasparino just wrote a book, Go Woke, Go Broke, because companies are suffering. We're seeing one by one them breaking from this fever they've been in since 2020, that we're a racist country that needs to be legislative, not to be. So do you expect pushback?
Well, of course. I mean, look, if we don't get any pushback, then it means we're not doing anything. Because, again, we have a long way to go to inch our way back to where America can be functional and can be great again. And it starts with education. And we really – look, the American citizens for a long time took their eye off the educational ball. My mother would tell you that the most important voice in a child's education are parents. We took them out of the equation. In Louisiana, we're putting them back in. We believed that we were sending our kids to be educated, and we only found out that they're being indoctrinated. And that's what CRT is. It's an indoctrination, not an education. In Louisiana, we're not for indoctrinating our children. We're for educating them. And I think that the more and more schools go back to the educational model rather than the indoctrination model, then a lot of the problems that we have are going to start to be solved.
Mark Zuckerberg came out and admitted the White House pressured Facebook to censor information. He said that it wasn't right. He got very specific about it and said, I'm not doing any Zuckerbucks, and I'm not going to cave to this anymore. What do you think is behind that confession that was really pounded out of him by Jim Jordan eventually? And even though I am not surprised, but the direct way in which he delivered this, I thought was a moment where there's got to be a reason for it. Why do you think he finally came clean on this? And what do you think? Is he worried about his own company?
Well, I think they all are. I think they're starting to realize that the Democrats really want to build first of all, I don't know if they're Democrats. The liberals want to build a fascist government, okay, under which the government is in control of your company and not you. And I think that Mark is understanding that, and he's seeing that there's a great opportunity for his company to be hijacked by the government, and that's not right. And I applaud him for that. And then I tell you something, the people who should be shocked are the United States Supreme Court for tossing our Murphy versus Missouri in Louisiana out this year.
What was that? Okay.
That was the big First Amendment case we had, where we found that the government was actively involved in suppressing the speech of Americans on the social platforms. Okay. Remember, I mean, we brought that case all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Now, the case is still going on, but we had this great injunction that was gonna basically keep a lid on what the Biden-Harris administration was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you go look, I mean, Alito, in his dissent, basically cascaded the court for not taking this up. I've said this all along, and I'm going to say it again. That is the most important First Amendment case in our history, certainly in modern times. And I think that Mark Zuckerberg's letter proves that. Because, listen, when the government can go in there and tell you what you can and can't say, then are we really a free people?
And remember, part of this, too, during the pandemic, they were bullies, and I'm being nice about it. But also in 2019, 2020, suppressing the laptop, anything positive about Trump, amplifying any negative. That's with Trump as president. I don't know. How is it that the president of the United States isn't the most powerful person in government? Think about that. If anyone should have been doing it, should have been, and it would have been wrong. But if Trump was doing it to Biden, it would have been wrong. And I would have said it on this show. You got to be kidding me. You can't manipulate and pressure social media companies to help win an election. But they for some reason, had more power than Trump in office. They have more power out of office.
Well, because the deep state is alive. I mean, it's alive and well. And I mean, it's real. And more people are recognizing that. I mean, the bureaucracy controls. You know, and that's the thing. That's the thing that frightens them more than ever is Donald Trump, because he knows he's going to come in there and break that up, which will be healthy for the state as a whole. And, you know, the thing we miss in this whole discussion is why does the government have to go and suppress American speech on a social platform? The government has their own own social media accounts. The White House has one. Why can't they put out, if they believe there's misinformation out there, why can't they just say that
put it out
there
and say, this is what the government said. The government comes back. Let's say you're ivermectin. You think ivermectin doesn't work. You want to rip Joe Rogan. Go do it. And we can judge you on what you tweeted or what you posted. And you could say that if you're a parent and you have a 13-year-old come back and say, I don't want to take the vaccine, you look at what the government's posting, and then you look at what other doctors are posting, you can make your own judgment.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Because you know what? It's not about free speech. It's about their speech. It's about it goes back to the word of indoctrination. And again, I think that Americans are sensing this. They really do. They really do. And I hope many of them wake up. I hope they go vote. And I hope they vote for Donald Trump, because I can tell you, him and J.D. Vance are the only ones who can bring back the American dream at this point in time.
Gotcha.
You bring Kamala in there, it's going to be a disaster.
All right. Governor Jeff Landry of Louisiana, have a great Labor Day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, 1-866-408-7669. I want to get from you. I'll give you my questions. I want to get from you what you think the question should be. And the follow-up with Kamala Harris tonight. I wouldn't even talk to Tim Walz if it was me. I would just go right for the presidential nominee.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm thinking that this is actually an interesting, maybe difficult situation for Walz, because if she stumbles and then he's caught mansplaining her, that's not a good look for the girl boss.
Yeah. I mean, it's also awkward if you are the vice president and you just sit there like the potted plant. Right? Abash, is he going to, like, even address him? I don't know.
What are you doing here?
And here's the thing. They'll probably just then start, like, chit-chatting, whatever. I think that this will be a tougher interview than they might anticipate. However, the questions are pretty obvious of what he would ask. So they've been prepping for a week. Mm-hmm. They've lost a ground. Like, they gave up that momentum that they had out of the convention sat back for 5 weeks, 5 days, getting ready for this.
And that's some of the debate that Dana Perino brought to Fox and Friends today. And there's a big downside, because if Kamala Harris starts talking in circles about fracking. Fracking is something that they do to get natural gas out of the ground, pioneered in the 1970s. Governor Walz, who is a plainspoken defender surrogate, was very good for Joe Biden. Told us Joe Biden was in great shape, by the way. He's not going anywhere. He was probably his number one surrogate. So they're friends. So he'll be good as soon as he finds out what the policies are that he's defending and reversing. But do you even talk to him about it? Does he weigh in? For example, if all the questions are going to be like, what was it like being on stage when all those balloons dropped? Can you believe you did that? What would you say to your mom if she was alive today? Not that those questions shouldn't be included, but that should be an introduction. and then you got to get into it. I'm going to list here seven major decisions that your campaign has says you've changed your mind on. First off, why did you change your mind on fracking? Why do you feel as though there's no need for an EV mandate? Will there be any subsidies for EVs? Have you co-sponsored the new Green Deal? What changed? You co-sponsored Medicare for All. Why doesn't that work? What did you find out about the math, the quality, the doctors? Well, you know, is there a reason? Why did you not say it? Why is it that you had these, oh, you're in a rush because you only had 4 days, but your surrogates knew you changed. Why not put them out day by day and then back it up and take questions on it so people can act like you're really included? You know what's going on. Here's what Kevin McCarthy said. Cut seven.
I think she tries to laugh it off like she did with the border. When even Lester Holt said, you haven't been to the border, she laughed and said, but I haven't been to Europe either. It was her job to go to the border, and she would avoid it. She's going to avoid every chance she can. Her history of campaigns is she starts strong and then she collapses. This is a short campaign. Yeah. Let's be honest. If she had to run to win the nomination, she never would have won the nomination. So she's trying to 100%. Avoid any press, try to just stay there, and try to take any position they think popular.
But you know what's so interesting and encouraging is that the American people in 2020 and 2020 were listening to that argument that the world is on fire, it's about to end, we have to go all renewables, we can't use oil and gas, sign up for the new Green Deal. And then we realize how much money we'd be writing to China and Russia, how they don't have to go do anything. They can still build coal plants every single week like they're doing, and we're the ones paying the price for the developing nations. Now people that aren't into it, they never bring up the new Green Deal. They never bring up the Paris Agreement. They never bring up the Iranian deal because they're all bad. Trump got out of it, and they were critical of him. Now they realize he was smart to do it. And how do I know that they know it? Because they are adopting everything that he stands for. He's got to be smart, cool, and calculated about pushing back.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from New York City. I'm Brian Kilmeade, 48th and 6th, if you want to find out. But you can't really get to see me because there's so much security here. In fact, when Mark Thiessen, even though Mark Thiessen is a contributor, if he doesn't have ID, we don't let him in. And he still has got to go get separate ID when he comes to New York. But he lives in Washington, D.C. He's going to be one of our guests this hour. And I would argue one of our favorite all-time guests, Arthur Herman, at the bottom of the hour. He is a prize-winning author, a military historian, and he wrote a great column in the Wall Street Journal about Elon Musk and how he should really head up NASA. I love the idea of Musk doing what he talked about with Trump, and that's being a government efficiency expert. I mean, this guy's putting chips in brains, building a tunnel company to alleviate traffic. He also has this SpaceX thing that I think is working out. And some say Tesla is the finest electric car company in the world. And that's just off the top of my head. Is anyone else doing anything? Mark Thiessen, why aren't you inventing something? I mean, why does he have to do everything?
Well, I can't even get in the building. I got to do my phone. maybe you put the wrong brain in my head, Brian. the Abby Normal.
So did you understand my reference today?
I got it immediately. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Everyone's like staring at you, like, what are you talking about? It's like, do you put a brain from someone named Abnormal in the 6 foot?
Eric, Mark sent me the clip. I'm going to send it to you. Maybe we'll play it on the air. So I was referring to is this historian Axios today, that the Frankenstein team that Kamala Harris has put together is beginning to come apart. And what it is, the Frankenstein team is they use the Obama people. She had the Harris people, and she insisted on keeping the Biden people around. Maybe that's a good thing. But together, they don't like each other. At the upper levels, there seems to be some coordination. But at the lower levels, the Obama people don't like the Biden people. The Harris people feel as though they were sidelined, and they are resentful of the fact that they've been sidelined and diminished for the last few years, the few that are left, because most people, 92% of the people that started with her quit. So together, they've been forced to live together. And as the thing, it was great when they were on the sugar high, but the sugar high is down and people are being resentful and territorial. So I came up and I said, this better not be, if this is Frankenstein, let's hope it's not young Frankenstein, and the brain they put in the person, in this creature's head, is not abnormal.
Yep. No, it's exactly right. And but you know, next thing they're going to do, they're going to be performing Putting on the Ritz together.
As it ends. So, Mark, on that exact story, you know, yeah, the ego is involved with these campaigns. How do you think this is going to work when things get tighter than they are right now?
Well, right now, as you said, they're on a sugar high, right? So she, you know, she's rising in the polls because she's not an octogenarian and she doesn't have dementia, and so that's by definition a step up from where they were, a month and a half ago. But okay, she had to get her campaign organized. She had to pick a vice president. She had to have a convention. Now it's on, all right? And now the rubber hits the road, and it's a real campaign. And she's doing her first interview tonight. I certainly hope it's good. They said it's not going to be the last one. So but they've turned this whole thing into a high stakes moment. And if she screws this up, there's going to be panic. Because it's just like the panic didn't start until Biden couldn't complete a coherent sentence in the debate. If she does a bad interview tonight, they've raised the stakes so much, they're going to start panicking again.
Yeah, I mean, she's not good unscripted. She never has been. And I was thinking about this last night. The reason why this is so dramatic and her positions have changed so quickly and she has no problem doing it is because she has no core. I'm not saying she doesn't have values as a person, but as a politician, she doesn't stand for anything. You're not telling her to be easier on crime or be easier on crime or tough on crime. Why is she able to switch it? Because she doesn't care. They wanted tough on crime to be a DA and an AG. Fine. You wanted George Floyd happens. You want to be easier on crime. We're going to get a bail fund together to bail out the criminals. You got it. Hey, we're all about the new Green Deal. You got it. Let's get all electric cars. Oh, the new Green Deal doesn't work. Fine. I'm done, because she doesn't stand for anything, Mark.
Yeah, I'd take a slightly different tack on it, which is I think that she's a committed leftist. I think that she's Bernie in lipstick. It's just that they realize that is not going to fly. Just like it wouldn't have flowed. The reason why they picked Biden in 2020 was because they knew Bernie would lose. And so she has to backtrack on every far left position she's ever taken in her career in order to win. And she's willing to do that because, you notice we were at the Democratic convention, they barely mentioned climate change. But she has said climate change is an existential threat. But to them, Trump is a bigger threat. So they need to normalize her, paint her as a fake centrist, just like they painted Biden as a fake centrist. And, she's the new moderate Trojan horse for the leftists to get back into power into the White House gates. But as soon as Trump is gone, as soon as they've beaten Trump, she's reverting to form. It's going to be a Green New Deal, Medicare for all. There's going to be no restraint on the left wing direction of this Democratic Party. So this is all a ruse that they are putting on to try and woo centrist swing voters into thinking this isn't quite the threat that it really is.
Okay, I differ with you. I don't know if she if you told her to be president, this would you have to do. You got to be a moderate. She would do it. My sense is she wants to be Queen of England. I don't think she wants to do anything. She doesn't study her position papers. Yeah. She doesn't want to go to the border. She just doesn't. The only thing, she doesn't want to do election integrity. They said to her, according to this book by Charlie Spearing, when she first started, they said, we could either let issues come up and have you handle them, or you could pick five issues that mean something to you and you could work on them on your own. And she's like, I don't want to pick five issues. You tell me. And they go, okay, the border. She's like, yeah, I don't really want to do that. And I'll basically be doing a real-time protest by not doing a good job on it. But let's fast forward and talk about the polls that came out. The polls that came out show essentially that Kamala Harris is even up by one or tied or down by one in almost every battleground state. And to me, if I'm the Trump people, I would not be upset. And if I'm the Harris people, I would not be celebrating, because of course she's going to do better than Biden. And without a question, and with this momentum and able to read a prompter, why wouldn't she be on a high? And if you do that convention with Oprah on down and you're still in a flat-footed tie with 70 days left, I don't think there's any reason for her to feel confident. How do you feel?
I think it's Trump's to lose, but I think he could lose it. It really depends on. So here's the thing. He's always he has many virtues, but one of his flaws is that he is hyper-focused on his base and on feeding his base. Right now, they just re-indicted him. I mean, they tried to assassinate him. His base is going to walk over molten lava to vote for him on Election Day. The election's going to get decided by a small group of independent swing voters in a handful of states, many of whom like Trump's policies but don't like the way he behaves. Didn't like what happened in January after the election. Didn't like what happened on January 6th. And they're trying to get past they know this administration is a disaster, and they're trying to get past the things they don't like about Trump. And so he's got his sole focus for the next, you know, eight weeks or so has to be on giving them permission to vote in their self-interest, making it possible. So the goal is, one, not to re-offend them, and not remind them of what they didn't like about him. Two, remind them what they did like about him, which is his policies and his success in office and how well they were doing and how well their pocketbooks were and how they had savings instead of record debt and how their credit cards weren't maxed out and all the rest of that. And then wrap this administration around her neck. Donald Trump, during the debate, he shouldn't call her Comrade Kamala. He shouldn't use nickname. He should say Madam Vice President. The vice president. Remind people she's the friggin' vice president.
Great point.
She's in charge right now. You know, and you know what she's trying to do something. I had a column this week that there's only once in the last 188 years has a sitting vice president won election to the presidency, and that was George H.W. Bush in 1988. The last time was Martin Van Buren in 1836. The reason why is because when Bush won in 88, it was because people wanted another Reagan term. Nobody wants another Biden term, or she wouldn't be the nominee. He would be. And so the dynamic is in what she's trying to do is she's the first sitting vice president to try and run as an outsider, as the insurgent, and paint Trump as the incumbent. And so we got to remind people, no, she's the incumbent. She's in charge right now. Like, you know, you don't like EV mandates? Well, then go to Biden and tell him to lift the tailpipe emission standards that they just put in, which are going to require 56% of all cars to be electric vehicles in 8 years. Like, you can do this now. You don't have to wait till after Election Day.
And wrap
this administration around her neck. Don't let her run as the outsider.
Arizona, just so people know, the Fox News polls came out, and it's Arizona, Harris by one, Georgia, Harris by two, Nevada, Harris by two, North Carolina, Trump by one, and, you know, more will be coming out. Trump wins in the categories of men, whites, no degree, rural voters, white evangelicals. When it comes to Republicans, he's got 94% of the Republican vote. She's got 96% of the Democratic vote. Now, when it comes to Georgia, Brian Kemp was on with us today. He is in. He has no problem with Trump. I talked to him in the break. And he has no problem with Trump. I said, you guys going to appear together? He goes, sure, when the time's out. And he also said, you know, Trump reached out, put a nice post up too. So they're heading to the right direction. And if anybody can win in Georgia, it's that governor who beat their rising superstar, then Stacey Abrams. So I think that's a good sign. I think that Trump wins on the merits. He loses on abortion, but he wins on inflation. He wins on immigration. And he wins on the economy. He also wins on foreign policy, Mark, which I know you can appreciate.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. But we can't be complacent, because this could go the other way. This is a close election. And I just to, you know, you're going back to our original conversation. You're right that she's lazy and that she doesn't particularly care. But the Democratic Party that she leads is going to demand that she go to the left as soon as this election is over. And Chuck Schumer has said. He said it in Chicago during the convention. If they get unified control of government, if they control the White House, the House, and the Senate, they are going to get rid of the filibuster. And if they get rid of the filibuster, here's what they're going to do. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to pass the Green New Deal. They're going to pass Medicare for All. And they are going to add Senate seats. They are going to add the District of Columbia as a state, so they get two more Democratic senators. They're going to possibly add Puerto Rico, which could give them four more Democratic senators. And we do not have a vulnerable Democrat running in the next two election cycles for the Senate, which means they will control the Senate for the next decade, and they will pass all their radical agenda with a simple majority vote. If this is, you know, I didn't think that Michael Anton was right in 2016 when he said it was a Flight 93 election. This is a Flight 93 election. This is our country does not recover if they get rid of the filibuster and enact all these things. We'll never be able to roll it back. We'll never be able to put the genie in the bottle. So we cannot be complacent. Like, literally, the fate of the country rests in Donald Trump's hands.
Listen, there's nothing you said that was hyperbole. You said everything that Chuck Schumer has confirmed. And remember, when she was a candidate in 2019, she said on CNN, I'd be willing to get rid of the filibuster and pass the new Green Deal. So she said it. But if you want to know how inept she is without a script, here's a little taste of it. She went in front of a high school in a rural section of Georgia yesterday. Let's listen.
You are leaders. By the very fact that you all are here in this room, doing what you do at this incredible school.
Okay, great. They're not five. They're 17 and 18. She's talking to them like they're little children. She also talked about how she played in the band. So this is the part. This is where Walt is a very good advocate. He's a good surrogate for Biden. He was saying how great Biden was. Now he's the vice president. So sitting next to her, he'll be like strong. He'll be busting in like Tom Cottonwood with Trump or something. So I think that he will, you know, allow her to answer and then he'll follow up. Allow her to answer, then follow up. And even though there's a risk of her looking dominating, she's willing to take that risk because I think she has that little confidence in herself.
Yeah, no, I mean, and here's what Dana Bash needs to do is ask her. She's flip-flopped on all these positions. First of all, she hasn't flip-flopped. Her campaign is. So get her on record as saying that she's flip-flopped on all these. I mean, the list of things she's flip-flopped on, the wall, the Green New Deal, Medicare for all, fracking. I mean, I'm trying to keep a list and I can't keep up because it's changing every day.
What about the wall?
But here's, the wall. But ask her, why did you change? What did you discover suddenly that walls work? Was it because of the walls, the fences that you put around the Democratic convention worked so well to keep the protesters out? Why do you support a wall? Why do you support fracking now? You said you wanted to ban it. Have you discovered that fracking is a good thing? You supported EV mandates. You co-sponsored a bill in the Senate that would have banned all electric cars in 10 years. You now say you're not going to do that. Why? Why do you the question on all this stuff should be why? Because the answer is Michigan. The answer is I'm flip-flopping because of Michigan and Pennsylvania, because people in Pennsylvania want fracking and people in Michigan don't want electric cars. But that's not a good enough answer. What's the substantive reason? And if you do, then expose her to be, remember the ads that Bush ran, George W. Bush ran against John Kerry with the windsurfing? She's like a friggin' wind turbine.
You know,
they should do the same ad with his green energy project, you know, with her face on it. I mean, she's literally flipping around like a wind turbine. Have her explain why. Why did you change? What is the substantive reason she can't do it?
How about this
because
question?
There is no substantive reason.
Zelensky wants to be able to use the weapons we gave him to hit Russia where their weapons are and lift the restrictions. Would you lift the restrictions on President Zelensky? Yes or no?
Yeah. And the answer should be 100%.
I mean,
the Russians there was a airfield from which the Russians are launching. They're launching these jets with glide bombs that are destroying schools and hospitals and critical infrastructure and energy. And the Ukrainians asked the Biden-Harris administration for permission to use long-range missiles to take them out, and they said no.
I know.
They ended up doing it with drones that they had built themselves, which was less effective, and a lot of the planes survived. This is insanity.
We don't have
a strategy to win.
I'm not on your podcast. I have to take a break. I'm on traditional radio, Mark Thiessen, but we could go another 4 hours.
When are you going to be on my podcast?
Well, you know what? When you ask me,
I did.
Oh, that's right.
You did. Asked you.
All right, I'm gonna come. Mark Thiessen, have a great Labor Day. Back in a moment with my great audience.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Among young black women, registration is up more than 175%. 175%? Can that possibly be right? You must have triple-checked this or many more times than that.
You're right to repeat the number because I've more than triple-checked it. It's incredibly unusual to see changes in voter registration that are anywhere close to this. I mean, to remind people, 175% is almost tripling of registration rates among this specific group. You just don't see that sort of thing happen in elections.
And that's significant because you would think that those registrations are going to be for Kamala Harris. Don't you think, Allison? I mean, you would think that if the women are going, she's very strong with black women. He's stronger than most Republicans with black men. Right?
Than most Republicans, though, which is the key. But then they, something we had at another point in the show is just, it's not always like getting the people to turn out, the independents. It's also getting people who are the inconsistent voters. Right. So if she's now getting some of those inconsistent voters to register and vote,
right, that should help her. What Trump's got to do is go out there and just run on these merits in his own entertaining, interesting way on the economy. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do on immigration. This is what I'm going to do to help gut your cities of these illegal immigrants who have put up those pup tents down your block.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Let's bring in Arthur Herman. He's a prize-winning author, a New York Times bestseller, a fellow at Hudson Institute, and a military historian. He had this great column that really is a bunch of them, but really it is a wake-up call. And that is this. In the 1990s, on Bill Clinton's urgings, a lot of these weapons manufacturers merged. And because he said it would be so easy if we didn't have to worry about competing bids, and we just go ahead and give you guys a mission, let you be for profit, but you start building weapons at a good rate. Well, what happened is, because of that, we consolidated. We have a lack of diversity. There's a lack of competition. And our military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about, that everyone feared, is dissipated to the point where our own defense is in jeopardy. Arthur Herman, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Brian, it's been a while, but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, so Arthur, you should tell everyone at home. So we spend all this money on the military. Why is it that China can pump out weapon systems quicker? Why is it that China is the one who's rearming Russia and rebuilding their industrial complex? What happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened is that, first of all, China has its own strong industrial base. You know, we outsourced our industrial base over the course of several decades. And a lot of the work that goes into building a strong military involves making stuff, making things, producing cruise missiles, artillery shells, tanks, a whole range of other hardware, which we're learning through the war in Ukraine is actually going to be pretty important if we find ourselves in a conflict with a near peer rival, whether it's China or whether it's Russia. It's all adds up to what is it? What kind of steel can you put on target? That's a big part of what an industrial base does. China has that industrial base that they could turn on and move forward. They have another key advantage, though, Brian, and that is that by law, any commercial company in China has to work with and cooperate with Chinese military and intelligence services. What they want and what they need, commercial companies have to come across. It's a matter of law. We don't have a system like that, and thank God we don't. But what we do lack and what we really need are the kinds of incentives that's going to bring our best and brightest in the high-tech industries to be involved in developing those next-generation technologies that are really going to be the decisive edge for you in confronting China, in confronting Russia in future conflicts. You have to produce the hardware, but you know what? You also have to think ahead about what's coming and where do we gain a decisive edge. And part of the column I did on, you know, three cheers for the military-industrial complex was about the fact that we need a new kind of military-industrial complex that goes beyond just having, you know, the big prime contractors like Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and Boeing, that looks instead to where do we find the best technologies that'll give us that decisive edge when we confront China in some future conflict, and how do we are able to prevail and deter through what we bring to the battlefield.
So you could also do it through private industry. So if I'm in a cutting-edge company and I'm making $1 zillion, the Pentagon could use some of the money that we give them to go contract that private company and say, we need you to make this weapon system with that innovative product you just came up with, that maybe a drone done for private reasons. You could make it more of a commercial reason. So you could license that.
That's a great point. And you can do that. You mentioned drones, and that's a classic example. You could do that with AI, which is going to be a really decisive edge on the battlefield and speeding up how decisions are made and how you process the data that gives you the best possible decisions to make in the midst of a confusing and fast-driving conflict. But and there are companies in Silicon Valley, in the high tech, who want to help, who are involved now, companies like Palantir, for example, and like Anduril, Palmer Luckey's company. They're eager to help and support our troops, our military, our national security. But you know what, Brian? There's also another mentality that operates in Silicon Valley that sees military-industrial complex as a dirty word that doesn't want to have anything to do with the Pentagon or with national security. They have this big globalist agenda that they're working on and want to support with their technologies. We saw this happen with Google when its employees went literally on strike of refusing to cooperate in a program that was going to be used to help to identify terrorists through facial recognition software. Not to blow up civilian buildings, not to engage in, you know, mass destruction, but to target terrorists. And they felt that this was overstepping their moral scruples. So you've got to overcome the frame of mind that works in the high tech, which is really in
another reason
anti-American,
right,
as well as neutral on America, and to bring on the companies and the people who really want to be involved and really want to help. And that's where the Pentagon needs to be headed.
And Arthur, that's why you break up Google and maybe some of these other companies will be less woke. I want you to remember this, and I know you always refer to this as a historian, but this is what General and President Eisenhower said.
We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
That's not a risk anymore. That's the point of your column, Arthur Herman.
Yes, it is. And, you know, Eisenhower, he was thinking about this in the aftermath of World War II, when we faced three opponents: Japan, Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, which that's exactly what had happened. The big arms and munitions manufacturers, which had become tools for advancing authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. In Japan, you had the big Zaibatsu, the gigantic mega corporations, which worked with and encouraged the government to expand its geopolitical ambitions as a way to make more money and to build more weapons. That hasn't happened. It didn't happen after Eisenhower's watch. It didn't happen during the Cold War. And where we are now is where the advantages we once had by having a very strong and robust defense industry as part of our GDP, as part of our workforce, is that's really faded away. And the primes, which still dominate the contract work that the Pentagon does and has a lot of very fine engineers and systems that they build and design, they're a tiny part of our overall economy, and they're no longer on the cutting edge of where technology is going. It's all in the hands of our commercial companies, the Magnificent Seven, companies like NVIDIA, companies like, we mentioned Google, I'll mention Meta, I'll mention Amazon. How do you get that expertise, that productivity, that innovation, working for our national security purposes and to help defend our allies as well. That's going to be the agenda. That's going to be the agenda for rebuilding a defense industrial base.
Right.
That's
so
really it, fit for the 21st century.
So for people who say, okay, let's start increasing our defense budget. I wouldn't do it without an audit. I wouldn't do it without a new sense of where this money's going and how to spend it. And the problem is the Pentagon doesn't want to budge and change. And everybody that goes in there says the same thing. It's almost impossible to get them to change. They wait you out. They wait out the elected officials. Arthur, thanks so much for putting it into perspective. We'll have you back and talk about where you see Elon Musk in the future. Arthur Herman, thanks.
You bet. Anytime.
You got it. When we come back, we're going to have Stuart Varney. We're going to do a simulcast with Stuart. And then we'll come back at the back end of that. We'll be able to take some calls. Keep in mind, too, that we're following a couple of different stories, and that is Dana Bash in a couple of hours is going to be sitting down with Kamala Harris. Why is that a big deal? Well, for 40-plus days, she has not done that for 40-plus days. And for about 30 of those days, she's done it without a running mate. Now she's named a running mate, had her DNC, and now it's time to sit down and talk about it. She doesn't want to do it. Among the people that have called her out is Chuck Todd. Among the people that have called her out is Charlemagne the God. These are people that want to see her do well and are getting a little insulted, like you all should be, that she's not doing anything. Well, Trump is doing podcasts with 21-year-olds. He's doing the Nelk Brothers podcast. Where else? I mean, just went with Dr. Phil. And overall, 20 other interviews. I mean, just the exact opposite. So what happens is when you put it out there, they'll find something and they'll make it negative. Well, that's a risk you take. You want to be president? You can't duck. You can't duck tough decisions. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Now the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, with Stuart Varney, we're going to go to him in a matter of moments. He's on FBN, so you get a chance to see what the studio looks like for the first time, maybe. But you could always watch on BrianKilmeadeShow.com. You can get the podcast. We're streaming on Fox Nation, too. If you ever get the app, if you're looking at the app right now, click on the headsets, get the audio. Or you can click on watch, and then you just page over until you get to Fox News Radio, because we now have three cameras who pick up motion, essentially. So we're able to go wide shot, small shot, double shot, and we'll be with him in just a moment. Then after that, we'll call and take some phone calls. So here's Stuart.
Coke's doing okay. 10:51 on the East Coast. That means it's time for Brian Kilmeade. Brian, just listen to what NBC's Chuck Todd said about Kamala Harris avoiding interviews. Roll it.
It only sort of reinforces this negative stereotype that she had coming into this race, which is, you know what, she hand-wrings too much, she's a little, takes too long, and this, there's a fine line between being deliberative and being paralyzed by a decision. The way they've handled it, I think, is a bit, it's been a mistake.
Can you think of a time in recent memory that a presidential candidate went 38, 39 days without giving a press conference or sit-down interview?
They're now just playing into her perceived weakness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any fumble now is going to get overly scrutinized in this interview.
Brian, I got to give you my opinion. It's just not good enough. A presidential candidate waits 40 days to give an interview, and then she can't do the interview alone. Not good enough. That's my opinion. What say you?
I haven't seen anyone on the other side of that, Stuart. There's people who say, as journalists, which is a joke, I don't think she needs to sit down with us. Really? What are you doing your job for? Why are you in your job? Why don't you just work for the campaign? You don't want to be a journalist. You don't want to be an anchor. You don't want to be a reporter. Everybody would want a chance to talk to a newsmaker, a leader, whether it's Argentina or America, if you have the opportunity. What do you mean they don't have to talk to you? Number two, this is not her strength. When she is off script, she's terrible. Watch back the 60 Minutes interview. She's awful. Walk back Lester Holt. She's absolutely terrible. See some of her appearances with Aaron Burnett and others. And I'm sure Trump has looked at this stuff like he's looked at the debate. Where she's sure of herself is when she was in the Senate and she was scrutinizing some of the nominees that Trump was trying to put in his cabinet, from John Kelly to Justice Kavanaugh. That's when she's good. And you should keep that in mind during the debate. But when you have to ask her, why are you... Again, why are you for fracking? Yeah. Really? What are you going to do right now to get Iran to stop their nuclear program? Why exactly have you not given Ukraine the ability to hit Russia in all phases possible to win that war? Are you going to give Zelensky the permission to go forward? Because she hasn't answered anything.
But do you think that CNN will ask those questions directly to her? Will they?
I think this is the difference.
They have to.
They have to, but this with Dana Bash. And I watch all the Sunday shows every single week. It helps me for this show especially. And I watch all the channels anyway. It's the follow-up. When you have a Trump official or Trump on, they have four or five follow-ups. And you saw with Tom Cotton this weekend, you see with J.D. Vance, with Kristen Welker, four or five follow-ups. Are you going to have an abortion ban? What happened on January 6th? The same two subjects all the time. With Dana Bash, she'll ask, what about fracking? Why did you change your mind? What about insurance, health insurance? Why did you change your mind? It stops after that. And then you have Waltz, who's a really strong surrogate for Biden. Remember, he told us Biden was in great health. He's going to be a great president. I don't know what happened to that question. He'll be there. And I think the risk would be, does it look like the man is taking care of a woman who doesn't have the answer to a question?
That's right.
People
that's
hate
right.
that appearance.
President Biden at the beach in Delaware, enjoying his second straight week on vacation. Obvious question, Brian, who is running the country?
Look, we've already been we know that President Bush can go to Crawford and still run the country. We watched them do it at Camp David. But with Joe, you know what Joe Biden's saying in defiance? You didn't want me, so I'm not going to do the job. The other thing he's doing is he went on the beach 3 years to the day when the explosion at Abbey Gate killed 13 Americans. 13 Americans, and marking 3 years until a horrific exit from Afghanistan, while former President Trump goes to Arlington and places a wreath and meets with the families, and meeting with the families of those who lost their lives to illegal immigrant criminals who have come into this country. He says, the hell with that. I'm going to sit under an umbrella on the beach. And if you want me to leave California, no problem. I'll do the same thing in Delaware. And you can't tell me that he is glued, zoned in to what's happening in the West Bank and in Gaza, while all of our men and women serving in the Persian Gulf right now have to sit there with two aircraft carrier strike groups and extend their stay.
Doesn't look good, does it?
Terrible.
All right, Brian, we'll see you later.
Optics
we'll be
matter.
Watching CNN tonight. Got it.
Yeah.
Still ahead. Tennessee.
Chuck, you're listening to FM News Talk 97.1. Hey, Chuck.
Hi, Brian. I understand that interview is going to be recorded.
Yes.
And then released. That's not an interview. That's a production. What's to keep CNN, who we trust implicitly, of course, from editing the interview to make it look better for her?
I would say the stakes are too high for them because, you know, their ratings have been absolutely awful. You might not know that. I look at them every day. They've never been so bad. I mean, ever since maybe the 80s when they first launched, no one thought we needed 24-hour news. But I would think they got to run it, and I think they'll probably run multiple parts. To edit and get caught editing to fix it for her will be the downside is too great. But I don't blame you for not trusting anything. I mean, I know Trump doesn't trust anything, especially on ABC with the debate. He brings up Donna Brazile giving questions to Hillary Clinton and getting caught. Marguerite at WNIS in Virginia Beach. Hey, Marguerite.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I'd like to talk a little bit about abortion. The thing is that I want the Republicans to win. They've lost multiple elections on abortion, and it appears to us out here that they're willing to do absolutely nothing to change the problems in order to get elected. And one of the big problems is that many people out here feel like we don't have any representation because the Republican Party is presenting us only with far-right candidates to vote for.
Do you consider Trump a far-right candidate?
Pardon?
You consider Trump a far-right candidate?
No, Trump is not. I'm saying at state level and for federal government positions like Senate and the House.
Yeah, Marguerite, you know what I had? Governor Youngkin on yesterday. I should have brought that up, but thanks for alerting me. I'm going to look into that. We love having Virginia Beach. Hey, back in a moment.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Have one. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here as we get closer and closer to Labor Day. This hour, we're going to be joined by Kennedy in studio, Daniel Lippman standing by from Politico. We're still trying to find out what kind of bounce, for sure, that Kamala Harris got from the DNC. The RNC was great. So was the DNC from both their parties' perspective. There's no doubt about it. Now the question is, when will the vice president feel comfortable doing an interview? She had to be convinced to do one today, and she's doing it with Tim Walz on tape. What else are you going to do? Is she just going to glide right till September 10th? There's a lot of people who have so little faith in her. They just want her to stay as the Queen of England until November 7th and just do that one debate and then hope you don't break anything, because there'll be enough Democrats that want you to be president and don't want Donald Trump to be president to get to victory. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
At this time, the FBI has not identified a motive, nor any co-conspirators or associates of Crooks with advanced knowledge of the attack.
That is the assassination investigation. That is the FBI representative yesterday. Questions intensify and impatience grows, and their lack of answers and inability to establish a motive for the gunman as we find out more about his homemade IEDs and little about his encrypted apps.
Number two.
We are releasing new Fox polls from key Sunbelt states, and it's anyone's ballgame. Former President Donald Trump holds a one-point lead in North Carolina. Kamala Harris is leading by one in Arizona, by two in Nevada and Georgia.
And Reuters polls are in, too. Shows real close race. New polls are out. Harris better than Biden, but her convention bounce was barely there so far. We discussed the Fox poll, the Reuters poll, and battleground game plans for both sides.
Number one.
The reason it's a huge event is because Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have made it that way. It should not be a big deal to do an interview as a presidential candidate. The fact that we're all like on pins and needles, like this could make or break her campaign tonight, is bizarre.
And that is animated as Dana Perino will be. The interview. Yes, the night has arrived with a ticket of joy. Sits down with CNN. Yet she needs her running mate by her side. What are your questions, and is there any adequate explanation on why she's trying to take most of Donald Trump's issues? Daniel Lippman joins us now. Daniel, are you surprised that she's allowed it to become such a main event?
I am pretty surprised because, as you said, presidential candidates, they want media interviews. They want to get their message out. And so the fact that she hasn't done any sit-down interviews, barely answered reporter questions since she was anointed as the Democratic nominee when Joe Biden pulled out, that says something. And I think it also talks about how she feels burned from the media interview she did earlier in her career as vice president, where she had that famous interview with Lester Holt that did not go well. And as vice presidents, it's never an easy job. Remember, Mike Pence, he was in a very tough position anytime Donald Trump would say or do anything controversial.
Remember Mark Whitaker, I think it's Mark Whitaker or Dan Whitaker, I forgot which one it is, in 60 Minutes. She wasn't happy with that one either. So she's going to sit down and relax, and she's going to do one with Dana Bash. She'll do a good job. But I just noticed, Daniel, I don't know if you picked it up, but if you watch J.D. Vance, for example, do Meet the Press with six follow-up questions on abortion or January 6th, as opposed to Christian Welker interviewing Elizabeth Warren on the same show, you'll see Elizabeth Warren go for 2.5 minutes without an interruption, and J.D. Vance go for maybe 22 seconds. So there's a huge difference in the temperament. And there's a lot of people in the media who just don't think that Donald Trump should be running for president. So there's no equality there. I'm sure you saw the study that 84% of her press coverage has been positive. 89% of Trump's has been negative. How do you explain that?
I think there was a lot of hunger in the Democratic Party for a new nominee. They thought Joe Biden was going to take them down to defeat in November. They were probably going to be right about that. And so there has been all of this enthusiasm from the Democratic base since he dropped out, and so much money, hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's $500 million that Harris has raised. And so the media, to some extent, is reflecting that in their positive coverage of Harris. And with Trump, he is a person who every few days he creates a new controversy. So this week, their team got in a scuffle with a Arlington Memorial Cemetery worker. A few weeks ago, it was He said she wasn't black enough, basically. She said, oh, is it being, you know, that's a new innovation for her to be black. And so, of course, the media is going to pick up on that and give that lots of coverage. If he didn't say anything controversial, I think the media coverage would be better for Trump.
So you blame him?
Well, I think that he causes a lot of his own issues and his own campaign advisors. He's sometimes at war with them. He calls them his geniuses in an ironic fashion because they sometimes want him to stay on script and stay on policy instead of doing the personal attacks, which he wants to let Trump be Trump. That's his motto. And that's people like Corey Lewandowski. That's what they're pushing for. But then there's other advisors that want to make him stay more presidential, as they say in air quotes.
But, you know, I think this version of Corey Lewandowski does want him to stay to policy. I know he was brought in at the last minute, and I don't think you have to worry about loyalty there. I think he's got a pretty good team around him. They want him to be more aggressive. But the other thing is, I think that when you look at the DNC and the personal attacks on Trump, that's what really drove him crazy. He said, really? You want me to talk about policy and talk about the environment? And I have people making these personal attacks from Barack Obama on down at me. So that's his mindset. Do you understand that?
No, I totally get that. And I also see how in 2016, Michelle Obama said, when they go high, we go low. Or when they go low, we go high. And that did not work. And so there's a different modus operandi that Democrats are operating on, which is to engage Trump, to attack him as much as they can. But also, they don't want to get sucked into a feeding frenzy where they're in a constant ping pong match with Trump in terms of responding to his attacks. And so they're trying to keep it, keep control of the narrative and of the message instead of having to feel like they are at Trump's beck and call.
So, I mean, it looks like a flat-footed tie. When you talk about 1 or 2 points in these states, you don't really see much of an advantage when you look at the polling, how tough it is to poll these days. But when you look at the most important issues, it's pretty consistent. The economy is number one, inflation number two, immigration is number three, abortion's either number three or number four. Then you got healthcare, everything else in single digits. If you look at that on the surface, Trump should feel pretty good about where he's at right now, don't you think?
Well, he should, but there are a lot of warning signs in these polls where you have states like North Carolina that are much more up for grabs than they were a month ago. And so Harris has closed the gap, and she is keeping it pretty close, and she's ahead in a number of swing states. And so take the issue of the economy. Since she's vice president, she has not gotten as much of the blame for inflation than Biden has. Because he's the president, you don't have as much power as vice president to control economic policy, control prices. And so even Democrats and independents, Democrats give her more credit for influence on the economy than Republicans and independents. So it's almost like it's hard to make the argument, hey, she bears all this responsibility for the economy or for immigration, but then at the same time say, hey, wait a minute. What has she done as vice president? So it's hard to have it both ways.
True. I think when you go ahead and give speeches on Bidenomics and say it's working for 3 years, and then if you're going to come out and say it's not, or prices are too high, you have to tell us, did you know they were too high? Why weren't you saying that earlier? In what way would you have done things different than Joe Biden? What is your plan? Did they you explain to it? Explain why you believe now it's important to be tough on the border. Explain why you think it's important now to frack. Explain why you think offshore drilling is okay, that the new Green Deal, you wouldn't use the filibuster to implement the new Green Deal. I mean, there's so many things that she has flipped on. She even, without attribution, said, I believe we should not tax tips. That was the beginning of the, and also she wants to start building the wall again if they pass that bipartisan bill. I mean, are you astounded that she's taking maybe 5 Trump core issues and agreed to do them while flipping from her own?
It is pretty noteworthy that she has really moved to the center a lot since the 2020 campaign.
Not personally, just through surrogates.
Yeah, exactly. And through spokespeople. And I'm sure we'll get to hear from the horse's mouth from Dana Bash, because I'm sure she will ask Harris those tough questions about, hey, you have said the one thing here, but now your campaign is saying you're in favor of fracking, or at least not opposed to it. And so I think she probably hopes that there's no videos of her windsurfing. Remember John Kerry in 2004, that really got him in trouble. Mitt Romney was seen as a flip-flopper too. And so, of course, you want a president and politicians who evolve when if the one set of facts leads them to give one set of policy prescriptions, and then 4 years later, the situation has changed. We have a much worse border. Then we want politicians to evolve and to adapt and not just stay stuck in the way in their old ways. And we also have seen, to be fair, we've seen Donald Trump move to the center on some issues too.
Like what?
He talked about last week. He said he wants to. He's going to be a great advocate for women and their reproductive rights. And women are, you know, Democrats responded, hey, what about Roe v. Wade and all the Supreme Court justices you put on? And immigration, he says, we want to have more legal immigration, which he has talked about previously. But that's the fact that he's talking about that again, given all of the illegal migrants we have, that is also, I think that we should take note of that as well.
Right. I don't think it's anything close to one thing about Trump. You can go back to 1990 with Larry King. He wants to be tough on the border, and he thinks we're getting our butt kicked when it comes to trade. He wants a strong military. Now she wants a strong military. Over the last 3 years, they've cut the military. It's not even keeping up with inflation. At what point was she going to tell Joe Biden to start building up the military? She has to say, I was overwhelmed. No one, they weren't listening to me, or I'm the last one in the room. Just like she said with Afghanistan, I was told, just like Joe Biden, on major decisions, I'd be the last one in the room as vice president, and I was. Now she's going to say, I wasn't?
I think she'll still say she was, but she also has to distinguish herself from Joe Biden, because this is not Joe Biden running for president. And so she can't put too much daylight between her and her boss, because she's still vice president and he's still the president for the next few months. But the American people deserve to know, how is she going to operate differently? When are we going to see, say, a policy part of her website? We have seen that Democratic.
Daniel, doesn't it drive you nuts? This is Daniel Lippman, by the way, Politico. Does it drive you nuts that I know everything's atypical because they decide to rip the nomination from Joe Biden? He had no choice. And she ends up, to her credit, consolidating the delegates and getting it. But for her to be 40 days in and not list the core tenets of what she believes she'd do as president, that is not something that should be taken lightly.
No, I definitely agree with you that maybe it helps politically now to win an election, because then she can't get pinned down. But if you want to be president for 8 years, which she does, then what is she going to do in her first 100 days? How is she going to deal with, say, a Republican House of Representatives if Mike Johnson keeps the speakership? What agenda is she going to push and to try to get passed? I think the American people deserve to know. With Obama, we knew it was going to be healthcare. With Biden, he talked all the time about Build Back Better. So what is her version of Build Back Better? She talks about the opportunity economy, which is great, and that's important, and that's something that a lot of Americans can get behind. Remember, Republicans were talking about opportunity way before Democrats were.
But the opportunity, the thing about what she's released with price controls, the thing that she said about $25,000 for houses, I'm going to look to build $2 million houses, incentivize people to build it. I'm wondering where all those policies were prior. But and what she plans on spending it on. And I just think also raising the corporate tax rate. So how she does it, how she makes that opportunity, is going to be the most interesting. It's a great word.
It is. And remember, Republicans were talking about, they still talk about having equality of opportunity, not equality of outcomes, because we're not a socialist country. We don't believe in
exactly.
If you work half as hard, then you get the same amount at the end of the day. And so she's still. What is interesting about her is that she is also, someone who is a prosecutor, who is an attorney general. So she has gone after criminals a lot in her career. And she's had to adapt that life story and that bio for her CV to a Democratic Party that in 2020, there was a small share of Democrats, but millions of people who wanted to abolish the police. And so now They used to call her Kamala the cop. And so now she has to, now because of the crime issues in the cities, which has gone down in the last year or two, but it's still high, she has to say, hey, this is why.
I'm a cop again. She's got to say, I'm a cop again, because she's on the record looking to raise money to bail out criminals on the George Floyd riots. And she's got to say, I'm a cop again, even though that I have to look, more cops don't mean more safety. Even though she said that we have to look into abolishing ICE and accuse the ICE director of being basically akin to Nazi Germany. So all this stuff, she's on both sides of these issues. We got to decide, is she blowing with the wind? Does she have core principles? And lastly, your column is about Israel. You said walking out of the DNC, you felt as though there was an urgency among Democrats to be pro-Israel because of the way there's a section of their party that's anti-Israel, anti-Jew.
I wrote that story. I went to this Democratic group that's in favor of Israel, and there was an hour and a half of speeches from congressmen and senators who were pro-Israel. And so there is still a feeling in a big part of the Democratic Party that we have to stand by our ally Israel. And they feel like Harris is still a strong supporter, but they also know young people, they have to be told and taught why Israel is important and why it's the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah, thanks so much, Daniel Lipman. Always great to catch up to you. Look forward to your reporting throughout this very exciting election season of Politico. Thanks, Dan. When we come back, I see your calls up there from North Carolina over to Arizona. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Rick, you're in North Carolina. Rick, what's on your mind?
Friends that are Democrats and liberals, and for some reason, they don't have any responsibility. They feel like they have no responsibility for high gas prices, inflation, and open borders for some reason. And I think we have to start pointing fingers at everybody that voted for Biden for all the chaos that's going on. The FBI agents, the media, everybody that voted for Biden and that's going to vote for Harris and has caused all this chaos, we have to start pointing fingers at them as the root cause of
Who else would it be? Right now. It's their decisions on energy. It's their decisions on the rescue package that we didn't need, the infrastructure package, which hasn't been spent. But the money's out there and in there. They haven't bought anything. Number three, what about the Inflation Reduction Act? That's their investment. That ratcheted up prices. And Larry Summers warned them on the rescue package, a Democratic former Treasury Secretary. So you can't blame Republicans for that. You can give Republicans credit on the gun legislation. About 7 voted on the infrastructure package, but it was way too much spending.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I have Kennedy here. I couldn't unbook her at the last minute. I'm sorry, but Kennedy, you know what we've never done? We've never taken calls together.
No.
Right.
Can I announce something for the first time?
Yeah.
Do you have an affiliate in Pottstown, Pennsylvania?
We don't. I can't say we do.
Well, I hope you do, because I'm doing a show September 28th at Soul Jewels in Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Really?
It's an evening with Kennedy, and it's really fun because I go back to my childhood and tell, like, a lot of dirty, filthy stories from MTV, and I have video, and I have pictures that I've never shown
before. Is this the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, this is very exciting.
Yeah. So that's September 28th at Soul Jewels in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and there's going to be a meet and greet. I've got shirts. I've got hats. I've got swag. I've got merch. I've got a Sharpie. I will sign things.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a Sharpie.
And a Sharpie, Brian.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I might even take a scalpel.
Right. Well, I wouldn't see how that would help.
Might be a RICO violation because I will be crossing state lines.
Right.
But it's going to be very exciting. I did sort of a warm-up show a few months ago in Carson City just to see how it would work. And it works really well. It's super fun because I've got a PowerPoint and, you know, video and all sorts of pictures that I dug up. I have a picture of me and Dave Navarro, who obviously the guitarist for Jane's Addiction, in a coffin. And there's a story behind that.
A coffin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to be great. Where do we go to get tickets?
I have a link that I'll put up on my X at Kennedy Nation, but you can go to souljoels.com and you'll find me there.
How do you spell Joels?
J-O-E-L-S. There's no apostrophe.
Oh, like Billy Joel.
Exactly. But it's not, I can't say that this is Billy Joel's place. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe it is. Billy Joel's a big fan, Brian, so I think that he booked me.
You've met him, right? Have you?
I don't think I have. That's one of those people where if I met him, it would have been like backstage and passing at the Video Music Awards, because that's how I met a lot of the biggest people I've ever met. And I have to go, yeah.
UBS Arena is hosting the VMAs.
Yes.
Are we still doing this?
Kind of. It's funny because no one watches videos.
Right.
Like my children who are teens, they don't have a concept of MTV.
Wow.
And
I never thought that would go away.
Neither did I. So one of my friends was over and one of my daughters was giving me a hard time about something, like making fun of me for something. And the friend goes, you know that your mom was literally the coolest person in the 90s when she was a VJ. And my older daughter goes, what's a VJ? And I was like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. We've discussed this. Not in front of the company.
Right. That's unbelievable. The weird thing about that was your mother was.
Yeah.
That was.
If I was still a VJ, I'll be 52 in like a week and a half. That'd be weird if I was still a VJ.
Really?
Yeah.
I felt like.
Here we go, young people. This video, it's so brat.
But I would feel like MTV, you go to VH1,
yeah,
and then you go to retirement.
Heaven. Yeah,
exactly. You go to heaven. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say death. I mean, there's between VH1.
I don't know what the village is.
If you're not a VH1, I don't think you're going to die.
Yeah.
I think that's an overstatement.
No, I left MTV and went to Seattle and did talk radio and had a great time.
Right.
You know who I saw this weekend? Alex Rodriguez.
And what did he? Where was he doing?
He was not great.
Did he have a shirt on?
He did, which was a disappointment because I wanted to see the juice marks. But I interviewed him when I was doing a talk radio show in Seattle because he was a Seattle Mariner. He was a kid.
19, he was playing shortstop.
Yeah, and he was a baby. And
he was drug-free, I think.
Yeah, he was, because he was a teeny tiny person, just a little skeleton. I carried him around in a baby Bjorn. Uh-huh. But he was plugging something called Yummy Yogurt, and which was like a local dairy. And so I interviewed him for Yummy Yogurt, and he had this little Kermit the Frog voice like, hi, it's Alex Rodriguez, and I'm just real excited about Yummy Yogurt. And I saw him, I was like, Alex, I interviewed you in like 1998 about Yummy Yogurt. And he was like, yeah, I remember Yummy Yogurt.
Yeah.
And he was like super excited about that. And I said, oh, can we get a picture? And I pulled my phone out after he said yes. He's like, that's a horrible angle. You got to move to the other side. That picture's awful. And so I moved to the other side. And then I'll show you the picture because he is such a grump. So he just sat there with his sunglasses on, like, almost like a kid who tries not to smile. Like, this is my, I'm not smiling face. Look at that. Is that a happy person?
Not yet.
No.
What is it with that?
I don't know, man. You know what I think it is? Maybe he knows that I'm a notorious gossip. And I was just about to ask him if he had an engagement ring for J-Lo. And then his sexy girlfriend was standing right there.
Right.
And I'm sure it's a difficult time for her because everyone's like, oh, A-Rod's next.
You mean going back?
Yeah. Like everyone's like, J-Lo already has an A-Rod plan.
Can you imagine they were trying to buy the Mets.
The Mets. Not just a house. Not a $60 million Beverly Hills mansion.
Together, though.
Yeah. They were going to buy a baseball team.
Can you imagine?
Team.
That's all the Mets need. To all of a sudden have an owner and then they get divorced and now nobody owns them and nobody wants to say anything.
I mean, I guess it's a distraction when your team sucks.
Right. Although they're in the wild card berth.
I know. It's exciting. It's always exciting when New York teams do well, especially the Yankees.
So we're going to take some calls in a second, but I want to talk to you. Right now, we're basically a flat footed. I can go back and forth, one point here, one point there. And all the battleground seats, 1 or 2 points. Nationally, Reuters has Kamala Harris up 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. Actually, 44-41, and the national poll is about a 2-point gap.
I mean, so it depends on the poll, because Fairleigh Dickinson has her up by 7.
Oh, FDU?
Yeah. That's the one.
Do we recognize that poll, Allison?
We don't. We shouldn't.
All right.
Like, it's garbage. I got
a story for you. Allison handed me this before. How about this? You ever hear of Montana?
Oh, big fan.
Yeah. So, do you know that John Tester wants
I liked him better at the 49ers.
No, I'm talking about the state. There you go. So college athletes are being offered thousands to endorse John Tester for re-election.
That's gross.
College athletes in Montana are reportedly being offered cash. A group called Montana Together recently sourced athletes at UMT offering payments in exchange for promotion of Tester.
That's really
gross. He's down
by
about four. I mean, you got to be kidding
disgusting.
Me. But you're actually allowed to do that now with NIL.
I know, but that seems like a violation of, if not campaign finance, like
right.
ethics. Well, like, it's just gross.
Yeah, I don't feel like I can comment because I pay you to be my friend.
I know, that's true. Handsomely, and I'm here because the check cleared. That's all I'm saying.
That's
like, it's Thursday,
saying.
So.
You know, we did find out that Aaron Rodgers was paid $1 million to go on Pat McAfee's show. And he was making a ton of news. And they said, isn't it great that you got a friendship? You're a punter and he's a quarterback in a different team. He goes, oh, I pay him $1 million.
But I figured there was something to that because there's no way.
This is new news to you?
Yeah, because of the Ian O'Connor book?
No, this is something that was out there before that.
Oh, yeah. I like that Ian O'Connor book. It's very good.
Did you have him on?
I did.
That was nice of you to do that.
I think he's a great writer. I really enjoyed the book.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, does Belichick.
That is well-sourced. Jeter.
Right. Does Jeter?
Mm-hmm.
Derek Jeter.
I was talking about Randy Jeter.
Right.
He's a lesser known Jeter.
Right.
Great guy, though.
Right.
He's got a moving company.
Yeah, it's like Ozzie Canseco. He's kind of the Jose. You'd rather have Jose.
Yeah.
Not many people do an Ozzie spy on. They should. Hey, the other thing I want to ask you is, so tonight we're going to see at 9 o'clock a taped interview with Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. What's the downside for her for waiting this long?
There's a couple things. One, they're kind of burying it in Labor Day weekend because people will already start their
laboring.
Road trips. Yeah, they're laboring. Like by 9 o'clock, you're either out because you took Friday off if you're smart. I did not. I will be working tomorrow.
You consider yourself not smart.
Exactly. I'm an unintelligent person because I'm working Friday and Monday of Labor Day weekend. Bad, like a series of bad choices. The last 30 years will show.
Okay.
My time as a prosecutor. I know you're good. But yes, I will. I think that the downside is if she does well, no one will talk about it. And she has to look at it playing offense, not defense. Like, this is a chance for her to articulate her vision. And she has to pretend like everything she's doing, whether it's her big speech at the DNC or this is the first time right. she's being introduced in this role, because it is. But the fact that she's got Tim Walz there, her emotional support llama, and he's the one who's going to take the incoming because, you know, I have a list of questions that are coming out today on Daily Mail by suggested questions for Dana Bash to ask Kamala Harris. And, you know, number five of the five is, why is Tim Walz such a liar? Because he is. He can't tell the truth about anything. But I think
he's an exaggerator.
That's where Dana Bash is going to use the hard hitting journalism. She's going to go after him, which is silly because it gives her this inappropriate cover. And there are so many glaring hypocritical policy flops that Dana Bash needs to drill into those. But she won't because she wants to give her cover.
John, you're listening on Jacksonville, Florida, WOKV. Ooh, say hello to Kennedy, John.
Great city.
Hey, Kennedy, I love you on Fox. Always fun.
I love your eyeballs on Fox, John. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
They're looking at you. So, John, what's on your mind?
I have baby blue eyes. Thank you, Kennedy.
You're so lucky.
Okay, so I am a Republican out here in the hinterlands in Florida. Now, this is what upsets me. The media always takes the things that Trump does and twists them into a negative, where Donald Trump goes to Arlington National Cemetery in a respectful manner, lays a wreath in respect out of the families and the Gold Star families, and they come out with a negative story that him and his team did something bad there. You see?
I was reading about it. And it depends. It's so interesting, John, because it depends – where you read about it. You know, if you read about it on Fox News, you get just the facts. If you read the headlines on Drudge Report, which is now...
It's ridiculous. Huffington Post.
Yeah. It.
It's terrible.
I cannot imagine they have a readership now. I mean, it's just, it's so awful and slanted. And it's like, this was the most offensive thing and veterans are outraged. And it's like, they talked to one veteran.
And most aren't. And the families that were there had no problem with it. And they saluted Trump for even being there. And they gave him permission to go there. Evidently, it was a fight between the crew and some others.
Yeah.
But But let me add, too, who knows if that even happened? You see, they invent things, you see? And then one more thing I want to add. Tim Walz, mm-hmm. what do you call those people who lie all the time? What's that psychological term?
Inveterate liar or?
Pathological liar?
Pathological.
That's it. Pathological liar. Mm-hmm. If you remember, who was that Republican person who was removed from
Santos.
Office in New York?
Oh, yeah, George
They're the
Santos.
Same things.
Oh, I love George Santos. I interviewed him.
But John, the only thing I'd say is he did serve 24 years. The practice, he didn't see battle. So I think he's an exaggerator, embellisher. I think stolen valor is an overstatement. But you got to hold him accountable for making things up. And he attacked J.D. Vance on the day that he got named for a Marine service. He goes, what kind of Marine goes to an Ivy League school after? What a terrible example.
Yeah,
how dare you
Democrats
serve in the military?
Do you think went to Ivy League schools? It's like, where do you want to go? Like the best, highest ranked right. school in your area of study? Or do you want to go to a state school because it might sound better in a political attack ad? Of course you're going to go to the school that's like a top three law school. Thanks. You know, just because Tim Walz didn't get in there.
Right. It's a great way to learn about anti-Semitism up close. We'll find evidence.
How many Democrats do you think went to Ivy League schools? Like it's a really stupid
statement.
Line of attack.
It is. So, Susan, you're listening to WHIO in Dayton, Ohio. Say hello to Kennedy, Susan.
Hi, Kennedy. I love you.
I love you, too, Susan, and I love the great state of Ohio. My daughter is going to college there.
And what's her room number on campus?
I will not say. No. I will not divulge that.
Oh. Hmm.
Well, and I'm half English, half American. My dad was a U.S. Air Force vet.
Oh, nice.
All right.
So as far as Kamala Harris and not responsible for inflation, she's completely responsible for inflation. She voted 33 times to override the vote in Senate. So she's responsible.
Of course. So you think that, Susan, do you think tonight she's going to say, listen, Joe Biden's policies did the best to keep suppression? You know, Joe Biden did this, Joe Biden did that. And with my administration, you don't think she's going to say we presided over the Inflation Reduction Act. We did the rescue package. You think she's going to say Joe did it?
Yep, she's going to say Joe did it. She's trying to get to the center so she can fool the people that aren't paying attention. And that's why she's doing a pre-taped interview with Dana Bash so they can edit it. That's why she's got Tim Walz holding her hand mm-hmm. because she's incapable of having an interview by herself. You know, I want her. And she made such a fool of herself that he looked at her as though she was crazy. I mean, she just cannot. I don't know how she succeeded as a prosecutor. She must have settled all her cases out of court. She didn't go after the Catholic priests in San Francisco, which she should have done because they were pedophiles. And I'm a Catholic.
And Susan, the other thing, but she did go after the parents of people whose kids cut school.
I'm glad she's a Catholic and not a pedophile. Like,
right.
I feel much better about our conversation.
Yeah,
you
shouldn't have to make a choice.
Yeah.
Susan, thanks so much for the call. And glad you're here from South Africa. Back in a moment. More with Kennedy.
She said English.
Oh, they said South African.
I thought she said English. I'm half English, half American. Should we get Susan back on the line? We really need to do a 23andMe here.
Back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Yep, that's every pharmacist. We are back. Kennedy's with me now. Kennedy, let's find out if there's more to know. Parenting.
Can I have a thing of that Prevagen?
Yeah, it's right there in that brain.
Wonderful.
Parenting is hazardous to your health, the Surgeon General warns. They say more parents report high stress than non-parents. Parents have 33% on stress level. Non-parents, 20% on stress level. What do you say to that? You're a parent.
Yes, it's stressful bringing up tiny humans,
so
but incredibly necessary.
Right, necessary.
Like it's the most important stress there is.
Like, you thought it was necessary after you had them or before you had them?
I think it's necessary to have children.
Right.
Before and after.
That's what Elon Musk says.
Yeah, that's right.
And how else do you like Elon Musk?
I mean, we both are super smart. I've been to South Africa.
Right.
I like to think that I'm good at math.
And have you ever had a spaceship?
Not yet, but
invented electric car.
That's kind of a specific, and I like to keep it broad.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to beat him tomorrow. Show him. California passes a school cell phone restriction mandating limits or bans on campus. Finally, California did something right. Would you agree?
Yes. I think that there should be a way to access those phones in an emergency, though. That I will say.
Next, Brittany Mahomes, the wife of the Chiefs quarterback, some call him Patrick, has recently hinted at support for Donald Trump and then defended her stance by liking certain tweets on social media. Is it a big deal for the 28-year-old Sports Illustrated supermodel college soccer player to like Donald Trump? Is that news?
No, but it's just because she's Taylor Swift adjacent. That's the only reason anyone's paying attention.
Kelly Stafford, who married a quarterback too on the Rams, also seems to like Trump. Is that news?
That is less news than Brittany Mahomes.
Yellowstone rumored to return for the sixth season with Rip and Beth. Despite being set to end after the upcoming second half of season 5, the series may return for a sixth season. Your thoughts?
That's great. It's good for Yellowstone fans. Bring back Deadwood and finish that up.
Yelp sues Google, alleging a certain engine monopoly that promotes its own reviews. They're suing because Yelp feels as though their reviews aren't put high enough and Google's reviews are higher. Who do you Yelp for? What do you want out of life? What do you feel about this story?
I trust Yelp.
Where do we see you?
You can see me tomorrow on The 5. You can also download my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World, foxnewspodcast.com.
Do you want to see me?
Soul Joel's Pottstown, Pennsylvania, September 28th. I want to see Brian Kilmeade. Where?
October 20th in Peekskill, New York.
I'm going.
Where do you go? BrianKilmeade.com?
That's right.
The Fox True Crime Podcast presents Crimes on Campus, sharing chilling stories of scandal, corruption, and murder. New episodes available every Tuesday this month. Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.